I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Dead Island 2 is actually great, game makers are dropping like flies, and Suicide Squad has been shadow-realmed. This is the VGC Video Game Podcast with me, Jordan Midler, Chris Scullion, and Ethan Lawrence. How are we doing, folks? Ethan, thank you for joining us.
No problem at all. Thank you so much for having me.
Where have we dragged you out of this morning to come and talk to us about crap video games?
Bed. You dragged me out of bed. Just for everyone listening, it is 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
But, you know, the news never stops.
That's the time difference, because you're down some lover's lane in LA getting pissed up the old actor's life, you know?
Yeah, so. That's it. Yeah, in LA, not deep Essex.
Chris,
down and out in Brentwood.
Chris, speaking of being down and out, how have you been doing?
I'm all right, thanks very much. Just been plugging along. I've got a week off next week, so I'll be spared work, and also people will be spared my voice, thankfully, in next week's episode, I would imagine.
I imagine next week will be a tribute to Andy's trip to Japan, so I doubt I'll say two words. It'll just be him being like, oh, I was in the Yoshi ride, mate. As people that followed it,
when I was in Harajuku, just having a look at
Akihabara, mate, they've got no fucking games.
I feel a
virtual boy.
Sorry, I forget we actually have an English person on this team, so we can't do that anymore.
I knew I was going to be outnumbered, but I didn't expect it to feel so apparent this
got
early.
A copy of that F-Zero on the Super Famicom. £100, mate. £100.
A pony. I paid a fucking pony. Oh, we're all sacked, including Ethan, who doesn't even work for us. Anyway, before we get into the headlines this week, it's Dead Island 2, week after nearly a decade, and the game's actually good. We'll also grill Ethan as to some of his hot takes in games, try and end his career. But first...
Actually, just before we move on, I just want to quickly say Soulsborne games should have an easy mode. Continue.
I mean,
agreed.
Suits me. Agreed. As someone that had to review Elden Ring, these are both shit at games. Headline number one: Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League has been delayed to 2024. The game will now release February 2nd, 2024. Rocksteady said on Twitter, quote, "We have made the tough but necessary decision to take the time we needed to work on getting the game to the best quality experience for players. Thank you for the amazing community, for the continued support, patience and understanding, yada, yada, yada." This was personally delayed by both Jason Schreier and our friend Jeff Grubb. I go to you first, Chris. Will this game be any good?
I think it'll be fine. I think it looked okay. I was one of the few people when the State of Play went up recently that showed, was it State of Play or whatever it was, that showed footage from it, and I just kind of was well watched it, went on Twitter and says, this looks alright, looks a bit like Crackdown, and then suddenly just saw Twitter was full of people saying this is shite, and I was like, oh, okay, never mind then. I think it'll be okay. I get that a lot of people are angry about the live service stuff, which looks like it's kind of been shoehorned into it because every game needs that now, so I worry that it's going to be an Avengers situation where no matter how good, bad or otherwise the game is, it feels like it's basically a dead game walking at this point, and even when it comes out it's already got so much ill will towards it for rightly or wrongly that it's kind of it's got a hell of a lot of sucking up to do, and I'm not sure it's going to manage it.
Ethan, are you a Batman Arkham guy? Were you excited for the new Rocksteady game?
I've played the Arkham games and enjoyed most of them, not all. I mean, I'm sort of with you, Chris. I mean, it really feels like WWE in 2015. No, especially when they took the opportunity to thank the support of the fans. Yeah. And it's like, the fans hated it, man. Like, the whole reason you're delaying it is because they kept shouting at you. How can this possibly be a good thing?
We are the authority. We are the developers.
And you will like Roman Reigns. You will. I mean, broadly speaking, I rewatched the State of Play for this, and like... It didn't inflame me in any way. There was really nothing about it. Again, fine is really the word for it, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then continuing on with the, with it being microtransaction laden and it's just cosmetics and all that. I just look at it and I'm like, I could go out and throw a rock and hit a game that's like this.
Yeah, which is a bad sign for Rocksteady, who made like the greatest superhero games of all time and then takes a decade to come out with this. And it's gotten to the point where you just said, oh, it's full of microtransactions. And in the back of my head, I was like, is this one Battle Pass, but it's free, but no microtransactions? Or is this microtransactions plus Battle Pass, but it's all free? It's all been tarred with this kind of games as a service brush to this point, where it's like, I can't actually remember what's fucked up about it.
I did look just to make sure that I didn't, I didn't falsely accuse it of anything. And it seems to me that it's going to be microtransactions for cosmetics, season passes for DLC further down the line. I mean, it really feels sort of quite 2014 of it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's probably when they were starting up this game, like in the wake of Arkham Knight, they were like, okay, service games are going to be.
What's a live service? What's that?
Don't worry about it, mate. It'll be huge. By the time this comes out in 4 years, it'll be huge. Cut to a decade later and the game still hasn't fucking released. I suppose that's the thing with long development cycles now. Jason Schreier tweeted like a month ago that if a team is starting up a brand new, fresh slate game right now, it's probably a PS6 or an Xbox Series Zeta game. How are developers, Chris, meant to predict what is not only the trend, but specifically what gamers will hate by the time their game comes out?
I'm not sure. I think that's the kind of million-dollar question, isn't it? Where if they can, if a developer is or a publisher is, I would say savvy enough, but let's face it, most often it's just lucky enough, yeah, to pick the thing that people aren't going to be pissed off about. I mean, anyone who's decided to put to start a massive 4 or 5 year project aimed at NFTs or the metaverse is in for a shock, because I think in a few years' time that will essentially be completely flatlined. So anyone who's kind of put all their eggs into that basket is going to be a little bit fucked. So it's just one of the situations where you have to kind of, they have to look years and get the crystal ball out and go, is this still going to be okay by the time the game comes out? To be honest, I don't think the live service thing is going anywhere anytime soon. No. I don't necessarily. I don't love it, but I don't absolutely despise it like some people seem to. I think you just pick your games, pick the games that you're going to kind of stick to and play those, and just ultimately accept that everyone is now going to miss out on some aspects of some games, which is a shame, but such is life.
I mean, we know the score with playing FIFA. We talk about it all the time. Like the entire FIFA has completely changed to a point now where if you miss a promo or two promos, you come back and your team's completely underpowered, and especially as we transition into EAFC, I doubt that's going to go anywhere. I think there will be not a backlash in the sense, but I think there will be more developers coming out, and I saw this a bit when I spoke to the team for Immortals of Avium. They were like, no battle passes, single player game, no microtransactions, all that stuff. So it's almost become like a reverse marketing beat, where it's like, you know those live service games that all you hate? Back in the day, you were like, give us more content, so we made live service, and now you're like, no, just no live service. So it's a bit of a strange one. Ethan, do you think a year is enough time to strip all of that stuff out of the game, or at least enough of it to make people happy?
I don't think that's their intention. Like, I know you asked me a specific question, but instead I'm going to answer a different one. I don't think they're delaying it to take all that stuff out. I mean, when it comes to these sorts of things, like the argument often is with the case of sort of like, cosmetic DLC and things like that, that it is optional. But it's like, well, yeah, it's optional, but they didn't put it in there for you to not buy it.
Yeah.
And, it's the industry is very steadfast in its ways. I mean, you were talking about sort of like, live service sort of not going anywhere. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, sure. But like with so many different games trying to monopolize your time, it reminds me a lot of when all the publishers were trying to make MMOs to try and unseat World of Warcraft. And they couldn't, because people didn't want MMOs. They wanted World of Warcraft. I'm not sure if there's a live service game yet that has had that kind of cut through. Yeah. But ultimately, we're not all made of free time.
maybe like Fortnite on the younger end. Like Fortnite and Roblox seem to be the games that are kind of unshakable at the younger end of the audience.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I guess they sort of count as live service games.
I would certainly say Fortnite. As Roblox is a weird. I don't like to look at Roblox. It makes me feel uncomfortable.
I've been trying to get my head around Roblox because by all accounts, let's be deeply cynical here. By all accounts, it's traffic.
It's a money shifting factory for us.
I just can't understand what the fuck is going on. It's like it's the one game that makes me feel older than any other game. Like I am an old man. As soon as Roblox comes on, I'm like, I don't get this. So, but it appears that it's not a live service game. It's a series of potential live service games because anyone who makes a Roblox game has the potential to kind of update it with codes to get power-ups and all this kind of stuff, and they're frequently adding new stuff to it. So in that sense, I suppose it's live service. If when you're getting codes that if you don't redeem them quickly enough, then you miss out on whatever the goodies were and all that. So there is that kind of FOMO element that a lot of live service games do have. It's not for me.
Yeah.
But to your point earlier as well, I think one of the biggest issues that the industry has right now, and always has to an extent, is that they're not ever ahead of trends. They're almost entirely reactive.
Yeah.
Like, you know, no one talks about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds anymore. Mm. But, like, it took a fair few years there for Fortnite to supplant it. I remember it wasn't that long ago that EA were telling us quite explicitly that there is no room in the industry for single-player experiences.
Yeah.
And then Dead Space Remake came out this year.
They're putting out like some of the best single player experiences of like, especially with your Dead Space Remake, and obviously Star Wars is out in a couple of weeks, and from what I played last month, that seems great. Like it's all, as you say, it changes on a dime, it changes year to year. These big executives like wake up in the morning and they go, you know what? Fuck it, we're gonna pile it all into single player. I expect we'll shift back around, and at some point soon, with the teams that they're building, EA will be like, mind when Battlefield was actually as good as Call of Duty and like Battlefield 3, Battlefield 4 era? Let's get back to that. Let's not try and just secede all that ground.
That you bring up Star Wars, because like, if Dark Souls hadn't come out in 2011, would that exist now?
It'd be a very different style of game, but obviously those kind of like, I often think about the fact that Sony missed the opportunity to have the Souls games exclusive to PlayStation. That is
it's like how Blockbuster could have bought Netflix.
So I watched that Tetris film, and I'm going to forget everybody's name because I'm not good at names. So that's why I've got resident historian Chris here. The Donnie, who is played by we've got an actor and we've got a games historian here. He's played by the guy who played Dobby or voiced Dobby in the Harry Potter films. His name is, can't remember, but he plays the guy who discovered
Tetris. If only there was some way we could look it up.
He played the guy that discovered Tetris.
Does he play Hank Rogers then?
No. Taron Egerton plays Hank Rogers. Toby Jones plays Johnny Tetris, who discovered it and took it to the Maxwell Group and was like, I've got the rights to this. Do you want to do it? And at the end of it, it comes up a picture of him and it's of the real guy. And it's like, he never got over discovering Tetris and made no money off of it. That must be what the executive team at Sony are like. It's like, we could add Elden Ring. We could add all the Souls games. They got Bloodborne eventually, but yeah, it's the service situation is very strange. And this pivots into our second story because services ain't going anywhere, because Big Joseph Staten has joined Netflix to make an original AAA game following his departure from the Halo team. He said, quote, "In my work life, there's nothing I love more than collaborating with others to build worlds filled with iconic characters, deep mysteries, and endless adventure." He's joining Netflix as creative director for a brand new AAA multi-platform game. He left Microsoft earlier this month after 2 decades at Halo. Now, Chris, you bang on about this. What's going on with Netflix games? Give us the layman's explanation.
I bang on about this and nobody listens because Netflix is doing surprisingly interesting things with games just now, and I'm curious to see where it's going. At the moment, it's just mobile, but it seems clear that what they're building towards now is proper, like, not that mobile games aren't proper, but like big AAA efforts. They've got well over 50 exclusive mobile games just now on Netflix. If you open up your Netflix app, it'll either have a games tab or more likely it won't at all, and you have to literally type in the word games in the search bar and then you'll see all the games, and they've got stuff like, they've got a few Stranger Things games, they've got the exclusive mobile version of Turtles Shredder's Revenge, the mobile port of that, they've got loads of really interesting stuff, and it feels like a slow burn before they actually suddenly go, hey everyone, we've got fuckloads of games, and it sounds like they're now starting the steps towards the big ones, because they've got a game coming out based on that big sci-fi film that they're bringing out at the end of the year, which Star I can't Wars. Remember. That's the one. The Star Wars knockoff, which we did a story on, and I've instantly forgotten. But that is getting a game. You've also got whatever Big Joe's moved on to.
Yeah. That's a shooter. Gotta imagine they're like, here, Johnny Halo, come on. Do is a nice big shooter.
Well, he's talking
pick
about,
one of our shitey IPs and do the OA shooter or whatever.
I'm going to make a wild prediction here, a complete guess based on absolutely nothing. What was his quote again when he said he was happy to be leaving and all this shit?
He loves nothing more than collaborating with build worlds full of iconic characters, deep mysteries, and endless adventure.
Stranger Things third person action game.
I mean, here's the thing, though. By the time that comes out, is Stranger Things going to still be the thing?
Well, there's another series still to come, and then they're doing the animated version. So it sounds like they're going to keep the
Those
Stranger
kids will
Things.
Be in their mid-50s by the time this game comes out.
It seems they're going to keep the Hawkins verse, which is either a word that I just made up, going even long after those kids like get married and have kids. It seems like they're going to just create new characters in that same environment. So there's scope there for a kind of Alan Wake style Stranger Things game where you go to the Upside Dune and like,
the Upside Dune. That's the version that's in like Kilmarnock.
Stranger Things.
Ethan, as someone who is on Netflix, see that for a link.
Good.
How long before you think, you know what, I fancy playing a game, let me open the Netflix app, or does it just not cross your mind?
Well, first of all, the best game that Naughty Dog ever made was Jack 2 Renegade.
Oh.
Second of all...
He's just throwing...
Turn this off.
Second of all, I mean, wake me up when they make the Afterlife walking simulator.
You've got a paycheck coming as soon as that happens.
Can't wait for that. I wonder if this is the right move for Netflix, with AAA development being the time and money black hole that it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know how true these things are, but it feels like you can't go a day without there being some article about Netflix being in dire financial jeopardy.
Yeah,
it's like we spent $1 billion on 3 dating shows that we cancelled after one season. Let's just keep pushing forward, put the prices up, and make it illegal for you to share accounts. Like, yeah, I do agree.
I mean, this is the thing. It's very similar in many cases to live service, in that there is a natural ceiling on the amount of money that they can make, which is the amount of subscribers that they can have. And like, you know, I consider myself relatively switched onto the games industry, and even I sort of jerk with astonishment every time I remember that Netflix does games.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's had the cut through.
Oh, definitely not. You only had to look at the reaction yesterday when Oxenfree 2 announced its release date, and it was like, it's coming to PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Switch, Steam, Epic Game Store, and Netflix. And everyone was like, and Netflix? Like, is there a TV show? And it's like, no, the studio that made Oxenfree is now owned by Netflix. It'll be on their mobile app. So yeah, it's definitely not... As long as it's called Netflix, it needs a different... They need to spin it off as a different name. It needs to be called, fucking game... GameFlix, there we go.
This is the thing as well, while it's making mobile games, it's all well and good putting them on their app and sticking them on the, like, because you go in the app and you find the game you want and it basically sends you to a kind of blocked off part of the Apple Store or the Google Play Store where you can only access that game if you're a Netflix subscriber, so that's how they get around it. But when they're doing these big AAA games, like, how is that going to work? Because they're not going to be able to stream it like Amazon Luna style. I nearly said Google Stadia style, rest in peace. But if they can't really stream it because most people watch Netflix through their TV with a TV remote and nobody's going to go out and buy a controller just to play a Netflix game, so are they going to release it on console and just be like a normal game publisher? Or so this is the other question we need to have answered, is how are these AAA games going to be distributed?
Yeah.
When I was reading through it, it struck me that possibly the only way you're ever going to get away with it is if Netflix exists as a publisher.
Yeah. Mm.
Because, I mean, I know a lot of consoles, I think most of the consoles current have, like, Netflix integrated on there anyway, so maybe that's how it would work. But, I mean, if you're talking about multi-platform AAA, it feels like a really odd thing to do, to just keep it in Netflix's walled garden.
Yeah.
As opposed to just slapping their name on the front and releasing it like a normal game.
Yeah. It seems like you could potentially do it if there is some function, at least in the PlayStation Store, where the PlayStation Store can tell, obviously, if you have a subscription to something to give you access to download a game. So it could always be the case where link your PSN to your Netflix account, and then you go into the store and download 100 gigs of it normally.
Well, I've just had a terrible thought. I've just had a really, really terrible thought. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Is it going to be something like fucking SmackDown 2 was the best wrestling game ever made?
It's not that. This is genuinely content relevant.
Okay.
I'm thinking to myself, you buy your AAA Netflix game, mm-hmm. you boot it up, mm-hmm. and you start to play the game, and then it says, wow, you know what? This would be going a lot faster, and you would have a lot more extra stuff if you were subscribed to Netflix.
Mm.
There you go.
That's how there they'll you get you. World of microtransaction.
I was thinking about a month of Netflix at the start of it, and they're like, you've got your golden gun, your fucking golden sword, and then as soon as it tries to hit your debit card and doesn't work, it's like, you pauper, strip all your experience points back to level one. You'll
have a slingshot and a butter knife and like it.
Yeah. I was thinking something slightly less cynical, but I can see that happening. I was thinking more of a Ubisoft Plus situation, where if you're a Netflix subscriber, you just get it. And if you're not, then it's £50 or whatever just for the game, like they sell it as a normal game. But that,
again, I worry that Netflix is putting itself in a really difficult financial situation. If, like, I mean, God knows how much it will cost, like, to like run up a new studio that's developing AAA.
Oh yeah, I mean, the cost of AAA is absolutely ludicrous at this point. Like, the
larger beasts than Netflix have tried.
Yeah,
yeah.
The numbers that they are willing to talk about are usually like half of the reality. Like, it is ridiculous. I feel like we're in the kind of mid to late 2010s. There was like a huge number of studio closures, and I really can see something like that happening again, or just like a restructuring where there's fewer AAA games, although this year it feels like there is tons, so maybe there is.
That also goes back to Ethan's point about Suicide Squad, like how he doesn't think it's going to ditch the microtransactions and live service stuff. I don't see it either, because, like you say, it costs so much money to make these games, and if you delay a game till the start of next year, that's another nearly a year's worth of development costs and salaries and everything that need to be paid off. They're absolutely not going to cut off a major kind of a potentially major income source just to keep people happy, because they've got to pay that back somehow.
Yes,
I know it's easy for us to blame everything on COVID, but is the reason so many AAA games are coming out now just a hangover from the extended development time? Would you say?
Yeah,
this in is your like, professional opinion,
in my extremely professional opinion, the professional gamer has logged on.
Watch out, lads!
Yeah, mate, I'm a veteran, mate. I've been doing this for 10 years as of later this year. I mean, I started doing fucking FIFA pack openings, but it still counts. I think that this is the
You're
year
part
that
of the
it,
problem.
Like,
you created this.
I think this is the year that it kind of snaps back, especially with some stuff that we know, like Zelda was never planned to be a 2023 game, but obviously Japanese development was like horrifically impacted by COVID specifically. But yeah, this is the first kind of normal year, you look at the first couple of years of the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X, and it's like, these are slow. There were still good games, big hitters. Sony seemed to do really well about getting their games out consistently. Microsoft, different story. That's maybe not COVID. That's maybe like more existential issues than anything else. But yeah, I think this is the... I don't know about you, Chris, but this certainly feels like the most normal year in a while.
Yeah, and if nothing else, it feels actually like more packed, because all those games that were scheduled to release in 2022, because a lot of publishers thought, well, we're getting over COVID now, we'll be able to, and then as release nears, they go, actually, let's bump this into kind of early 2023 just to be safe. So now we're getting like big games every couple of weeks now, and you can see what's coming up with Star Wars, then Arcane game, and my mind's got Redfall, and then Zelda within 2 weeks of each other. It's just ridiculous, and it's going to be pretty packed year. But yeah, like Ethan says, it's a hangover from COVID. They're all finally kind of starting to, all the delays are kind of finally coming together, and we're just going to get a big game dump at some point.
The working title for this podcast, someone that Netflix could potentially hire, is Media Molecule's co-founder and the director of Dream.
Ethan, what's happening here is Jordan is segueing from one story to the next in what some would consider a professional manner.
It's one of my favourite things about the podcast. Any time there's the slightest bit of opening, the conversation could be halfway done, but Jordan's like, no, I've found my opening, we're talking about something else now.
What I think we should do, let's sit and carefully watch as he does it again and see how seamless this is, because budding podcasters and young children who dream of one day shaving their
speaking
head
of dreams,
like Jordan,
the director of Dream has left Media Molecule. Mark Healy, who has been at the studio for 17 years, said, quote, after an incredible 17 years of co-birthing and building Media Molecule, I have decided it's time to fly the nest, set sail and chart a new course. Today is my last day at Media Molecule.
He's like a coiled spring, yeah, isn't he?
It's pro, mate.
It's vintage.
I'm like a young JR.
Can I just question his use of the word co-birthing? Because that's not a very nice image at all.
Studio is a big thing, and it takes a village. Mark left a really nice note on Twitter you should go and check out, but this just follows the announcement that Dreams would be ending a big portion of its online support and general long-term support on September 1st. Chris, what went wrong with Dreams? What's next for Media Molecule? What's next for Media Molecule?
I don't know if anything. I mean, I've not played a lot of Dreams, so I'm not an expert in it. From what I understood, it was doing some pretty incredible stuff, the people that were using it. I don't know what necessarily went wrong for it. It just feels like, for whatever reason, it didn't blow up in the same way as a Minecraft would or something of that ilk. And for some reason, it just didn't click with... you didn't get a lot of people sharing a lot of Dreams content online like they would share their Minecraft builds or what have you. So for whatever reason, it didn't get that social media kind of, it didn't jump on that social media hype train that a lot of other kind of creative games benefit from. And so for whatever reason, it just never really... I don't know. It's a shame because they had multiplayer stuff planned and they had loads of other features planned for it. And they've obviously just decided, look, let's just cut our losses here and move on to the next thing because we're never going to hit the levels we were hoping to hit with this, which is a shame because by all accounts, it's fantastic.
It is incredibly impressive. It's a bit too much. It's a bit too hard to really get through to that Minecraft level because Minecraft makes all the sense in the world. It's fucking building blocks. But Dreams, you actually had to... Once you dedicated a night to sit down and learn it, it was like, I can't believe this is running on a PS4, first of all. Mm. But Ethan, did you ever mess about with Dreams? What's your take on this situation?
I never messed about with it. I mean, I've heard about it, but it seemed kind of... This is probably unfair because, you know, I haven't played it, so this is sight unseen, but it did feel like a bit niche.
Yeah,
if that's fair to say. And like, you know, we've spoken about Cup Through before as well. Like, you know, I haven't played Roblox either, but I never stopped hearing about that.
Yeah.
Whereas Dream sort of arrived and then I'd never heard from it again.
I suppose
it's always sad when like an online service gets shuttered like that, because I'm sure the people who love it really love it.
Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, it's a shame, but, you know, c'est la vie, as they say.
Yeah, it's a situation where you see a video of Minecraft and you see someone doing something, you're like, I get this straight away, I can jump in and play this. Whereas, yeah. Same with Roblox, really. It's like, oh, this looks hellish and horribly garish and technicolor, but I generally understand why this would be appealing to, like, a five-year-old or whatever. With Dreams, it was always, look at this amazing thing. It's like, oh, this is a cool recreation of a first-person shooter. Then you learn how long it took to make all that stuff, and there was obviously just the technical limitations. I thought it was always insane that it never came out on PC, but on the other hand, if you're on a PC, you already have access to engine tools, so it's...
I suppose that was part of its issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you are playing Dreams and you really, really, really like it, then at a certain point, you're going to evolve beyond Dreams. You're going to want to start making your own games that aren't in, you know, some PS4 walled garden.
Yeah.
Because it naturally handicapped its own maximum level of success, I suppose.
And it's making me interested to see how Everywhere is going to do, because it's basically, in a sense, trying to do... it's not quite as extreme as Dreams, but with its promise that people are going to be able to build their own levels and build all this kind of stuff from scratch, like right down to an intricate block by block level if they want to. It's going to be interesting to see if that can kind of hit the marks that Dreams didn't quite hit, and whether the fact that it's this creation suite on top of a kind of live service third person action racing fucking thing with this Mind's Eye game that they're also releasing alongside it. Looks like GTA, whether by just throwing everything at it, they'll be able to somehow keep the money coming in, because it feels like Dreams, one of the big reasons for Dreams' kind of ultimate failure was that it was a one-trick pony, and the one trick it did was magnificent by all accounts, but if people aren't into either creating their own games or downloading other people's created games, then there was nothing there for them, whereas Everywhere it at least seems to tick different boxes, but it's we'll see. I still don't think they've got the message out yet well enough for that.
Everywhere is just not an evocative enough title for me. As soon as you said that, I was like, is that the game that Miz is making? And no, that's Everything. It's just it's a lot. Hope Media Molecule move on to something else cool, because they're a great studio. Little Big Planet is like one of the definitive PS3 games for me, and they're a studio where everything they're going to do is interesting, because it's very rarely, I suppose, Tearaway is the only thing you could say that they did that was a bit more kind of by the numbers. But Media Molecule, hope those folks are all good. When we come back, we'll have chat about Dead Island 2, Horizon Burning Shores, and some Disney nightmare that Chris has been playing thousands of hours of. We'll see you in a minute.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I was trying to fucking help you!
And we are back. Chris, stop the presses. Dead Island 2 is actually pretty good. Can you believe it?
I can believe it, because I was singing its praises multiple months ago and people said, shut up, and now it's finally here.
And that was before you said anything, people just telling you to shut up.
That's just how people greet me. And now that it's here and it is actually good, I notice that nobody's retracting the shut up. But oh well, c'est la vie, I believe someone once said. But yeah, it's good, it's fun.
I'm a cynical man at the worst of times. I thought this is going to be an absolute bin fire, but it wasn't until we got the preview code, you were playing it, some other pals were playing it, and they're like, no, it's actually rock solid. And I was like, okay, well, and I saw some footage of it. I was like, that looks fucking gory as fuck. I'm well in for one of these. Set up Dead Island 2, the sequel to Dead Island 1, way more than I expected it to be. So you're in LA, which kind of is a similar environment to like the island of the first game. It's all very sunny and green. It's all very holiday-like. You are picking up household objects, meat cleavers, hammers, and melee killing the undead through LA. It sounds super basic, but the thing that really sold it for me, this game feels like if it came out in 2008, and there would be a different situation because of graphical fidelity, but indulge me, it feels like a game that should almost be adults only, because it's so fucking disgusting. Like, the gore is unbelievable. It's like live leak shit. You will hit a zombie in the head and their eyeball will pop out, and like, is it the stalk that holds your eye to the...
I can't pretend to be a medical professional.
Yeah, anymore. You've done for that last time.
Not since the incident. Yeah.
You'll be fighting this zombie and one of the eyes will be in and the other one will be like swinging on its cheek, and you just stop and you're like, they can't do this. Video games are for kids. They can't put this out here. It will scar them for life. So that element of it is fantastic. That's the flesh system, the Cryot. That's their whole degradation system, which is very impressive, and the reason that most of the time you'll be encountering like two or three or four zombies, because any more than that your PS5 would come crumbling to the ground, because they're so kind of intricately detailed. It reminds me of, do you remember the TV show where they would, I can't remember the name of it, but they would get like historical weapons, and it's not Deadliest Warrior before the go Ethan, have you got it?
I was about to say Deadliest Warrior, but you cut me off at the knees as per.
Much like in Deadliest Warrior, I cut you off at the knees. They would,
some
like
folded steel katana.
Yeah, they would get like the kind of see-through jelly body and like cut it with a big knife.
Are you sure this isn't Deadliest Warrior, because you're just describing Deadliest Warrior?
I don't think it was Deadly, because it wasn't Deadly.
I know, it's Muppet Babies.
Yeah.
That's the one.
But it's like that. I see a lot of clips on it in TikTok. They would like shoot a shotgun through this jelly body and you'd see how it would explode. The game is like that.
It's Deadliest Warrior. I swear down.
It sounds very Deadliest Warrior-y.
I'm not sure. After the podcast, I'm just going to edit it. So I'm like, Deadliest Warrior? It was
confirmed.
It got to the point where I would kill a zombie with a katana, and then I would just go around the body, chop every bit of it off, and I'm like, this is the makings of a serial killer. Like, what am I actually doing here? So that element of it is great. The characters feel like they could be a bit more fun. I played as a guy who looks like the rapper Lil Pump, and I was like, okay, this is where we're going to get the cringy millennial, showing my age, the cringy Gen Z dialogue. It's going to be all TikToking and doing the fucking woe and shit like that. And it's quite buttoned up, which was disappointing. There's returning characters from the earlier games, which are more fun. But Ethan, any history with this series? Any interest in picking this up tomorrow, I think, when it comes out?
Not tomorrow, because like, don't buy new games, lads. Let's just wait for it to come out. Like, wait for it to come out. Leave it a month so they can fix what's broken. To be honest with you, I had zero interest until you started talking about it.
Yeah,
it actually sounds quite good. I remember Dead Island 1, and I remember it being very, very turgid.
Yeah,
and to be honest with you, your description of the characters makes me think, okay, so the writing hasn't improved any. But I mean, if you're there for spectacle, that's also fun. Also, in addition, speaking of spectacle, Red Dead Redemption 2, if its head was shoved any further up its own arse, it would be able to see out its neck.
The guy's dropping bombs from multiple angles.
We shouldn't take that. They're talking about our boys. They're talking about fucking Scottish, the pride of Scotland.
You paint a fucking salt iron on my face in a second.
Just to make everyone at home clear, this was written in to the running order. Like, right at the top it says, oh, we're going to try and get Ethan cancelled with his video game tape. And then I tried doing it and suddenly, oh, Braveheart. Calm down, lads.
What I will say about Dead Island is that they've greatly improved the combat.
Yeah.
because one thing that annoys me about the game is that they should have called it Dead Island 3 because these pricks are pretending that Riptide never existed. But that
Castellian is the world's only Riptide truther. He's like, oh,
Riptide apologist. And also, but slightly happy that the pre-order gift this time is at least in game UK stores was a little plush shark instead of a half naked like torso that decapitated.
Torso, yeah. God, I remember that.
So they learned that lesson and then
fucking
some
glory days, man. Fucking the attitude era.
I like the fact that in the original game it had like analog stick combat, which was really quite, it was a good idea in theory, but it was really clunky, where you had to move the stick in one direction then the other direction to swing in that specific, and it was okay, but it was really slow, and the combat, the melee combat at least here is quite slow as well, but kind of deliberately, because they obviously want the player to eventually become overwhelmed by zombies, and so they want to keep their distance and not just go in battering a button, so it's deliberately slow melee, and which kind of makes the gunplay more satisfying when you finally get guns a few hours in. But yeah, it feels improved. It does feel like an older game, which nowadays is a nice thing. It's not like every 2 minutes you're told, oh well, actually, if you pay some real money, you can get this kind of, you can get steroids to boost your abilities and shit like that.
If you subscribe to Netflix, you can get subscribe to
exactly. So it's not that. It's just fun. It's just a daft game. It is the epitome of a 7 out of 10 game.
It's a very, it was a weirdly meditative experience. It's like, this is a game that knows what it is. It's like, we talk about it all the time. Are we scoring games on what they're trying to be or against this like ideal of what a game is? And it's great fun. It's a nice palate cleanser considering what's coming for the rest of the year in terms of these massive long-term open world games. It's not open world, it's like the LA's like broken up into kind of levels, which is an interesting way of doing it. It makes the actual level design a bit more cohesive because you're not having to force really long roads between everything. It's solid. It's weird though because it's like, it feels so out of time. I can't remember whose review it was, but they were like, in Dead Island 2, it's always 2011. And it's like, yeah, it does have some of the vibes of a game from that kind of era, but it's not.
I do want to pull you up on something.
Go on.
You described in detail severing all of the limbs off of a zombie.
Yes.
And then a couple of sentences later described that process as meditative.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to think you have serious problems.
Oh, like, mate.
You just stop.
I only know a couple of video games journalists, and you start to worry me now that I've been exposed to you for 40 minutes.
It's just the ones that work at VGC. It takes that out of you. I was quite a normal person before this.
What I will say about the dialogue is, because we talk about like the main characters, kind of the dialogue with the main characters usually a bit, but from what I played, bear in mind I've only played like 3 or 4 hours of it during the previous stage, a couple of the characters are quite funny, like the kind of characters you interact with during cutscenes. Oh, yeah. But they're these kind of characters that can be quite grating if you don't kind of get the joke. Like one, there's a house full of YouTubers at one point, or that was full of YouTubers before half of them ran away. And there's bits in the house. It's kind of my favourite bit of what I played, because there's like a fake apology written up on a whiteboard, and like as if a YouTuber was about to sit in front of it and say, "I'm saying this from the bottom of my heart." And so the script's all written on the whiteboard like a fake YouTube apology, and then you meet a YouTuber who wants you to kill zombies for her, so she can film it and put it online to get more likes. But she tells you, "Don't swear or do anything violent for the first 10 seconds because I've got a copyright strike already." And then if you do something like that, it's like, okay, that's quite what. Yeah, I did quite like the writing at times.
That feels more sort of like level 2 than level 1 writing, like, you know. We talk about the remedial at best writing style of video development. At least they've actually taken, because a lot of games, and I'm sure you both know this to be true, a lot of games would start with the idea of, oh, what if there was a house full of YouTubers in a zombie apocalypse, and that would be that's the end of that.
That's the joke, yeah.
Or all of the references would be like to YouTube circa 2015. Like it wouldn't be like contemporary stuff.
Who likes Ninja?
Peanut butter jelly, like a peanut butter jelly time costume hanging in the wardrobe.
Sneezing panda in the background.
But no, it was fine. I liked what I played of it, and we'll happily be playing through the whole thing when I get 3 seconds to myself.
Yeah. Well, full review on VGC, and tomorrow on launch day, I'm sitting down with some of the crew from Dambusters to have a bit of a pub chat. I have questions. I want to know what the fuck's been going on for the past 10 years. What have you been doing?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Is that we've been playing Riptide. What have you been
doing? You can't buy it anywhere.
I spoke to one of them for an interview a couple of weeks ago, and they said, like, this has almost been a blessing in disguise, this reputation that the game's had for being, like, in development hell, because they only stepped in, like, 2 or 3 years ago. So, like, someone was developing it, then it was scrapped, then someone else came in to develop it, it was scrapped. Sumo came in to develop it was scrapped. And then they gave it to Dambuster, and they basically started from scratch again. So, to all intents and purposes, this game has had a normal 2 or 3 year development cycle. But it's got this stigma of being a game in development hell because there were, like, X number of cancelled games with the Dead Island 2 name attached to it. But they were telling me, like, this has actually worked out well, because if the reviews come in and they're positive, and they seem to have been, it feels like this redemption story, even though they just made a normal game. Like, it seems like they've salvaged this burning, the sinking ship, and it's like, well, we just made a boat, mate.
Speaking of boats,
speaking of boats, what's next?
Aloy gets given a boat in the New Horizon Burning Shores DLC. It's tenuous, but it works.
It's very tenuous.
Horizon Burning Shores came out this week. We got our hands on it on Monday or Tuesday. There's a review on the site, but very quickly, it's a very solid expansion. You head to LA, theme of the week, apparently. The LA is not as... you wouldn't immediately know it was LA, apart from the Bloody Great Hollywood sign. They don't do the thing where you're going past all these notable landmarks. It's more of like a postcard version that's like, oh, there's the Capitol Records building, there's Man's Chinese Theater, there's a theme park down in the bottom right hand corner that's like, okay, this is very much a Disney analog. This is Horizon 3 Prologue. There has rarely been a DLC that is so obviously like, yeah, we are making a third one of these games, get caught up on this stuff, because this is what the third game is going to be about. Starts with Lance Reddick, sadly. It's just like, man, what a fucking shame. He was so good in those games, and it seems very much like the third game would be about Aloy and him going off new adventure, new world kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see how that's dealt with. There's also some new characters and a relationship that develops between Aloy and one of the new characters that makes it seem like they will also be potentially one of the stars of a third game, which I just kept getting this feeling of like, why was this stuff not in the main game? Because so fewer players are going to play this expansion than played the main game. And all the chorus of responses when I talk about Horizon is, one, you like it too much, and two, I didn't finish it because it's too long and it bored me. So I understand where they're like, okay, there's this smaller scale experience to introduce these characters. But yeah, it's very good. I would recommend people pick up. You need to complete the game to play it, because it's set after the main game, so that might be a barrier for entry. But Ethan, what's your thoughts on the Horizon series? You into it?
Really, really, really enjoyed the first one. Made it about a third of the way through the second one before I had to go off and do it. Well, that, to be fair, it wasn't the game's fault. I was shooting Horrible Histories away from home, and I was away for like 5 months.
Oh, brag. Mm. Oh, brag.
It's not brag. That's my job.
Name drop.
Oh, brag. Oh, brag.
I work as an actor. That's my career.
Fucking belly big boys.
Brag. Brag down. God, you guys are still smarting from the Red Dead Redemption thing. Jesus Christ. Incidentally, the best Final Fantasy is 9. Getting on to the point.
I'm not buying that one.
No, it's true. It's the best one. It is absolutely the best one.
It's 8. But anyway.
It's 9.
It's 7. Fuck off the pennies. It's obviously 7.
You conformist. It's 7 because everyone says it.
That's the one they remade. It has to be the best one.
It's 8. 8's the only one that makes you feel miserable. because
the talking to you two bastards makes me feel miserable. Anyway, Ethan, Horizon into it.
Yeah, the point I was trying to get to was that it wasn't that I bounced off it. I will go and complete it. at some point, because I was enjoying it. I do like those games quite a lot. I was interested to read sort of around this when I saw this was on the docket. There was a lot of talk about their one of the accessibility options being like a thalassophobia mode. Mm.
Yeah.
For people who are afraid of deep water. And I'm excited about sort of the realm of accessibility and sort of where we're heading. I've just come off of God of War Ragnarok, and the thing was lousy with accessibility options, and it's nice to see.
Yeah,
so good on the developers for that, because if you're going to make a DLC that's themed largely around being in deep water, it's nice that everyone can come along for the ride.
Speaking of phobias and such, there's during the Nintendo, the Indie World thing, or Indie World, whatever they call it now, yesterday, I forget the name of the game, I'm going to have to go and look up later, but people should go and watch it. There was a comedy looking kind of stick game, with the wee stick men running about, and it showed you some of the options, and one of the options, the two options were an arachnophobia mode, where it says there will be less spiders, and then an arachnophilia mode, it says there'll be a lot more spiders.
That's amazing. Can't get enough of bloody spiders, mate.
That's incredible.
Yeah, the accessibility stuff seems to be like an internal Sony thing, because the Naughty Dog games are ridiculous. You have like pages and pages and pages of accessibility stuff. And I was watching something about The Last of Us Part 1, and it was like, yeah, when the original game came out, we had like 3 accessibility options, and it was like subtitles, hard of hearing mode, and a few things, and now it's like a huge focus. So
it seems that there's been a push on the PlayStation Store as well to sort of integrate the accessibility options into like the PlayStation Store.
Yeah.
So that you know before you buy what you're able to get. I don't know if it's been 100% successful. I haven't looked into it too deeply yet. No. But, I mean, again, it's all a step in the right direction. So, you know, good for them. Sorry, we were talking about Horizon. Sorry, I
didn't know that. Accessibility is more interesting than that.
No, it's going to be interesting when the new Final Fantasy comes out, because I've seen some backlash already from some people who are kind of accessibility kind of campaigners. I think Laura Kate Dale was complaining about the fact that it's got these kind of easy modes and aids and all that kind of stuff, but you have to apply them to your character.
It's like an accessory that actually takes up
one or two slots, so you can either turn off the. I'm making this bit up, but like, if say I had QTEs and you have an option to skip the QTEs or instantly win the QTEs, for example, you can equip that as a slot. Rather than just being an option, because maybe you're not very good or whatever disability you have prevents you from being able to react quickly to a QTE, you have to actually equip that to your character and kind of therefore lose a slot that could go towards something else. So it's going to be interesting when it comes out to see how that's handled, because I think there may be a wee bit of backlash.
Yeah. Just quickly before we come to the last chunk of the show, Chris, Disney Speedstorm, this is a Chris Scullion joint.
It's a Chris Scullion joint. I like it. I'm not sure how well it's going to do, because I don't see a big community around it yet, the same way that Multiverse has had. Well, we saw how that worked out, and the same way that Disney Dreamlight Valley currently does still have. It's a karting game, so it's your basic kind of Mario Kart knockoff, but it's really good on the track. It's like karting games are my genre, they're my kind of my guilty pleasure, and so I've played like far too many I'd care to mention over the years, and this is one of the better ones in terms of handling stuff. It's up there with like Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. It has that kind of drift. The drift has that feel, and it's really, really well done. The characters are really well designed. Everyone's got their own voice acting. Everyone's got a unique special move, which gives them a proper... It does let you actually think, maybe I'll go with this guy, instead of just picking Mickey Mouse because it's fucking Mickey Mouse. You go, maybe I'll go Mike from Monsters, Inc. because he's got a door that you can go through to zip ahead in the track and all this kind of shit. The only sticking point is that it's entirely built around live service, and it's Game Loft, so it's a particularly egregious form of live service. And I said in the review, like, Game Loft go in completely different directions when it comes to how they handle this stuff. You've got Dreamlight Valley is actually really quite mild when it comes to microtransactions and stuff, and when it goes free to play, it's going to be interesting to see what they do, because it's actually pretty, you can play that game in like an Animal Crossing game and never be bothered about, oh, maybe you want to pay money, but you can just kind of go on with it. Whereas they've got like a couple of Disney mobile games which are just fucking impenetrable if you haven't been playing it since like 2016, because you turn up and go, oh, here's Mickey and here's Goofy and here's 4,000 other Disney characters who are all locked, and you need to pay 20 quid for each character, and it's just like, no, I'm just not interested. This is kind of in the middle, but more towards Dreamlight Valley, and that it's fine. It works totally fine as a racing game, a kart racing game. I love it in terms of its gameplay mechanics. It's just some people will clash quite strongly with the kind of unlocking characters with shards and playing daily tasks to get upgrades, equipment and all this kind of shit. That's going to annoy some people.
All that fun stuff. Ethan, at the risk of your career, are you a Disney guy?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Disney bothered him.
it's like the same as sort of anything. I don't get sort of tribal around sort of like, you know, massive multimedia conglomerates.
Why not?
Because I might want to get a job with them at some point.
What's your thoughts on the BBC? Anyway.
Get rid of the license fee. That's what I reckon. I don't like feeding my children.
Every time.
Yeah, BBC, please let it live, because I need to eat.
You need that bad education money to keep coming in. Every time.
Yeah, that's been flying in over the last 7 years. that's that up-to-date reference.
Look, when that show came out, I was in high school. It was a very big, it was the thing of the time. So those are my references.
You should be watching Horrible Histories, I tell you. Oh, brag. You've got a job. Oh.
You should be watching the latest Magic Mike.
I didn't even mention that. Yeah, no, Scullion,
I'm mentioning it.
I'm bragging on my behalf.
I'm doing my fucking job and bigging up our guest in the hope that he'll actually decide to come back one day.
You didn't even mention who I am or what I do.
I know, you're that, just
well, there's going to be loads of people who's going to be like, who?
It could be argued that those people are ignoramuses and they should know who you are, and if they don't, then hell mend them, as my granny used to say.
There he is. It's not Hall with the assist.
All they're going to think is, who is this guy who isn't Scottish on this podcast and keeps saying terrible things about games I like?
Well, that's the thing. I try to bring our guests into the environment, which means unfettered abuse and a slagging match throughout.
I watch Magic Mike's Last Dance, available soon on Blu-ray.
I'm admittedly not the demographic, so I've not seen it yet.
Do you not like love and comedy?
Just sad enough.
He's done you there.
I don't mind a bit of comedy, but I'm strictly non-love. What's your role in said movie? Because I've been really curious. Do you get the kit off, or are you just supporting?
No, we wanted people to come and watch it. I play the stage manager of the show, so a lot of the time is me spent in a little booth, like pretending to press buttons and cue lighting.
Excellent.
It's very good. Yeah. And at one point, Channing Tatum gives me a big old kissy on the head.
Oh, what? Does he? Oh,
bet you've not washed your head since then. I wouldn't.
No, it's filthy.
I've never seen any of the Magic Mike films, to be honest. Presumably they don't go all the way, like, visually, because that would be like,
no, it's just cock out
explicit
the entire time.
Just swinging their lads about.
Does he get the Tatum pole out? You know, nothing like that. It's like
just let him do his work, Ethan. He was setting that up for about 15 minutes.
I really thought that after he said Tatum pole, you were going to have some kind of amazing segue into the next section.
I was up till 3:30 in the morning thinking of that one.
Speaking of people I would really not like to see get their kit off, I asked our listeners what their favourite 7 out of 10 game was. That'll have to work for now.
You're not going to go back and fix it, are you?
Nah. As soon as this podcast is done, it's a Pete Donaldson problem, I'm afraid. Favourite 3-star 7 out of 10 game. Chris, you said you would think about it. Did you think about it, or did you just sleep in your coffin like usual?
I did think about it. There are 2 7-star games I would like to...
Seven stars?
7 out of 10.
That's a belt. That's like me reviewing a PlayStation game.
The only 7-star game is WWF No Mercy.
Yeah.
A couple of 7 out of 10 games from my past. I love Cannon Spike on the Dreamcast, which is a kind of part shooting game, part... It's like a top-down shoot-em-up, but then there's got Melee in it as well. And it's got Cammy from Street Fighter in it. It's got Arthur from Ghouls of Ghosts in it. It's got Mega Man in it. And they're all playable characters, and that's awesome. But the big one, the 7 out of 10 for me that I would love to see return, is Excite Truck on the Wii. That to me is was massively underrated at the time, and if it got a wee HD sheen and a bit of 60 frames per second, I think a new audience could discover that and realise it's just kind of mental fun.
Five more people. Ethan, what was your choice?
I've sort of gone for most recent and all-timer. Mm-hmm. The most recent one was Evil West.
The
best game from 2009 that came out in 2022. if you're in for a bit of mid-tier Xbox 360 jank, I can't recommend it enough.
Speaking my language.
It really, really, it scratched that itch that I didn't realize I needed. It was really good. But I was flicking through, just the piles of old games, specifically from the PS2 era, because I mean, that was the dog. And, my eyes alighted on two titles that I'd like to share with you. The first being Stuntman Ignition.
Yep.
Which I remember playing the absolute shit out of back in the day. I loved that game so much. But the one that really got me, because I just remembered how interesting it was, Peter Jackson's King Kong, the official game of the movie.
That's not a bad wee game.
Yeah. That is an interesting little game, because on the face of it, like, oh, movie tie-in, it's probably going to be absolutely by the numbers. But no, it's really interesting. Like, ammo is severely limited. There's no on-screen HUD, so you press a button. And not Adrian Brody says how many bullets he's got left. He collects spears, chuck stuff around. I mean, I haven't played it since 2005, but I remember it being really quite interesting.
I played that on the 360, because when the 360 came out, there was like no games for it for like 6 months, and you'd end up just over time buying all the launch games, because that's all there was, and that was one of them. And yeah, you're right. At the time, I was like, this is actually, because at one point, like, you could set a spear on fire and then set fire to the grass, and it would slowly kind of burn through the entire, like, an entire field would all go ablaze, and I'd never seen that before in the game.
Really sort of weirdly ambitious.
And at the end, you could unlock a scene where an alternative kind of bonus stage where you play as King Kong and get to win. You get to kind of bat away all the helicopters and the planes and stuff, and then he just climbs down from the Empire State Building and fucks off. He doesn't actually die.
That's just slowly walks off screen.
Exactly.
But then Incredible Hulk music playing in the background.
There we go. A double reference.
Ethan, are you somewhat disappointed that the era of like terrible film games is over, so there's perhaps less of a likelihood of you getting a wee cameo and like Magic Mike 3 on the Wii or something like that?
that's not the reason why I'm sad that era has ended. I am sort of sad that it's ended, because like King Kong's a good example, but like, you know, those games used to be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
like, you know, it used to be made by, you know, mid to low tier developers who would like churn them out sort of at a rate of knots. But like, because they sort of had a formula and a template for making those games, occasionally they kind of did something a bit wacky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's an interesting... Someone should write a book on film tie-in games. I wonder if there's anyone on this call that would...
Mate, my hands are like fucking throbbing 24/7. I'm booked out.
Coming 2029, every single film tie-in game.
Joe, I've had something in the works for a number of years now, which I'm not going to share on here in case some other retro themed site nicks it. But it's similar to that, but not identical to it. And it's been a passion project of mine, which I've been beavering away on. So maybe in the coming months, people will find out more about that. But it's about tie-ins, but not film tie-ins.
Ooh.
Watch this space.
I just think it's telling that you referred to VGC as another retro themed site, as if we are a retro themed site just because of the people that fucking work at it. Listen, old bastards.
When I write, everything I write is retro themed. Even if not directly.
Okay, we got a million responses for this 7 out of 10 thing. I want a yes or no from each of you when I tell you the game, if you think this is a banger 7 out of 10, right?
Just before we get into it, people who maybe not didn't see it, Jordan selected Deus Ex Human Revolution, was it?
See, I selected Human Revolution, and after thinking about it, I was like, I probably like that a bit more than a 7 out of 10, but if I picked the actual game that I'm famous for saying as a 7 out of 10, I'd get arrested. So let's...
Before you go on, tell you another one that didn't get mentioned. I didn't see Epic Mickey.
Oh, yeah. Just the game that nearly drove Warren Spector away from making games for the rest of his life.
Exactly.
7 out of 10.
Yep. Simpsons game as well.
Game's all right.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Weird situation where every platform had a different cover. Anyway, we're in the fucking weeds here. Right. Yes or no, 7 out of 10 banger. Lost Planet 2.
Never played it.
Yeah, it's all right.
apologies to at Nick and Twitter for that. At Death Not Jesse, Robert Lundrum's The Bourne Conspiracy or Xbox 360?
Having just waxed lyrical about how much I like film video game tie-ins, didn't even know that was a thing, let alone played it.
Yeah, I was aware of that one, but I'm pretty sure that was quite limited in terms of gameplay.
At Ryan Big Mac, John Woo's Stranglehold, that's a yes for me.
Yes, very much so.
That's a bang on 7 out of 10.
That's one of my favourite autograph stories, where I think it was Ryan King in Official Xbox Magazine at the time got his copy of Stranglehold signed by Kurt Angle for no reason at all.
I mean, really, you should have got it signed by Ric Flair if you're going to get a John Woo game signed.
Oh, that's true. Oh, very good.
It's true.
Nick Verge from Pop Agenda says Days Gone. Days Gone's not a 7 out of 10. Days Gone's like a 4 out of 10. Way!
I never played it.
Fine. I guess it's a 7 out of 10. I mean, I didn't hate it.
That game's a bag of balls.
I didn't hate it. Fine. It's all right.
That was my BBC review. A bag of balls.
I worry that this is going to be the most contentious thing I've said on the podcast, that Days Gone is basically fine. Right.
Yeah, you're going to get so much abuse.
Speaking of Sony games that could be arguably said as a bag of balls, our friend Stephen Powell from the BBC says The Order 1886. Either you've played that?
Yeah.
What do you think? 7 out of 10?
It was okay.
Not even
it was
approaching a 7 out of 10.
Correct.
It's 7 minutes long. The world's shortest game ever.
1 point for every minute.
70% of the screen visible because it had those big fucking black bars.
One point for every werewolf that was in it.
Well, yes. There is one part of that game.
That game is actually just ahead of its time, and that would actually work really well on those ultra-wide monitors now because it would fill them properly.
Play it in IMAX. Someone called at Danielle Partis, never heard of her, says Star Wars The Force Unleashed. I think that is the quintessential 7 out of 10 game, if you ask me. Not on the Wii.
Oh, never mind it. I'll completely, not say what I was about to say.
The Wii version was the definitive version. Bring it back.
No. It's funny because the Wii version and the 360 version were completely different.
Yeah.
And I quite preferred the Wii one, but I appreciate most people didn't.
Of course, so Nintendo's Stockholm syndrome at that point.
Yeah, Scully and just plowing his own furrow there.
That furrow's been ploughed quite substantially. Nearly 20 years of ploughing.
Podcast title, nearly 20 years of ploughing. And this one came up over and over and over again. Mad Max, WB's Avalanche Mad Max game from a few years ago. I think that's a really, really solid game.
I remember it. I didn't play all the way through it. It was on PS Plus at one point.
Yeah.
I don't remember it particularly well, but I think that makes it... But I don't remember hating it, so I guess that is a 7 out of 10 game.
Yeah. It's in that kind of strata of like, oh yeah, that was fine.
That was definitely a third-person action-adventure with an open world. That is what that was.
Can't deny it. Okay. If you have any complaints about Ethan's appearance on this podcast, you can send that and any questions, comments, and concerns to podcast@videogamechronicle.com. Now, Ethan, would you like to plug your content at the appropriate time and not drop the fact that you're a big famous actor every two seconds on this show?
This now feels like you're bowing to his previous complaint and that this wasn't originally planned, and now it feels like you're shiting yourself because he's going to complain.
No. I just found
we'll promote your shite.
I've just found... I just happened to have found myself on Ethan's IMDb, and if I just sit and read this for the next 2 hours of the podcast, will you be happy then, Ethan?
You think it's going to take 2 hours to go through my IMDb? You must read very slowly.
Where can we find you?
You can find me on the internet in all places at Ethan D. Lawrence, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and I'm trying to push the Twitch at the minute. I was playing Slay the Spire last night, which was good laugh. Trying to push that. But yeah, at Ethan D. Lawrence everywhere, and check out my stuff. It's on the IMDb. It won't take you long to read.
You talk, Chris, how long's your IMDb?
Fuck, mate, don't get me started on my IMDb. Can't move for Oscar nominations.
That's because of your alter ego, Dame Helen Mirren, isn't it?
That's true. I was in a Lemmings documentary once. I don't know if that counts.
That's the most on-brand thing ever. I'm surprised that you were never in one of those like mid-2000s Charlie Brooker game programs, because you were
I wasn't in the loop. I'll tell you what I was in, and this is apologies for pushing your runtime over.
Oh, Ethan, let's just leave. He'll be going for an hour about this. Some long-held grudge.
Sorry, it ends with me looking like a prick, so it's fine.
Okay.
I was asked to do one of those, I remember the 80s of fucking shows. It was on National Geographic, because they fucking love that stuff. And it was called like the 80s, the decade that made us, or something like that. And obviously one bit was video games, and they were talking about Pac-Man and the Game Boy and all that. And I went there and had like a proper like 2 hour chat with them about, tell us about Pac-Man, tell us about Space Invaders, tell us about that. And I was like, oh, and they used fucking 10 seconds of it. Like, it was one of these talking head things, and I was like the head that said the least. And they basically get two sound bites from me, and the one first sound bite was me going, Pac-Man is a game where you play as a little yellow man eating dots, and then they cut to somebody else. Well thanks for my fucking expertise there. You could drag someone off the street to do that. And then the second one was me. And then the second one was me saying, apparently the creator of Pac-Man says that it appealed to women because they liked eating, and that was why he thought women liked playing it. I'm like, so you expose me as an idiot and then give me one sexist joke, and that's the only thing I fucking contributed to that whole show.
That sounds like it was edited by one Jordan Middler. That's exactly how I would watch it.
What were you doing in the mid-noughties?
I was in primary school at that point, so...
I was in prison.
I was doing a pen stretch. Thank you for listening to one of the more chaotic episodes of the Video Game Broken Podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Jordan Midler, Chris at Scully1888, and Ethan at Ethan D. Lawrence, VGC at VGC_News. We'd like to thank the great Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast.
Can I very quickly recommend people go and watch Series 8, Episode 4 of Doc Martin, the episode entitled Faith, because I believe it stars one Ethan Lawrence. I would say it's one of the most heartbreaking performances you'll ever see man, woman, or beast portray.
I would like to back that up, and also make sure you check out How to Talk to Girls at Parties, and look out for John, who was the seminal character. Could you have told me you played a character called John in that, Ethan?
I could have done, but I didn't, because I didn't think you'd be interested. I have a third nipple in that one. I orgasm with it. Watch the film.
Why have we not spent the entire pot anyway?
I know.
Because apparently it's bragging!
We don't even touch on the fact that the fucking this Magic Mike guy is called Woody, which is as blatant as you'll ever hear. They might just call him Johnny Knob.
Right, Johnny Knob. Speaking of Johnny Knobs, Chris, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ethan, say goodbye.
The Last of Us is one of the most miserable experiences I've ever had.
I agree with that one.
Might be miserable, still one of the greatest games ever made. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
I buy my doors off the internet.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.